We got a fancy new studio computer.
Yes, we do. Woo! 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 Yeah, yes.
Not going to make a big difference for what the history, but it's going to make a big difference for me editing things like what the history and YouTube stuff and putting stuff on YouTube and stuff.
And Rufus Project stuff.
And Rufus Project
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, don't forget Rufus Project.
Absolutely.
And redeeming features.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I might even get to do some more one credit challenges. Easier with less fuss and better results.
Look, everyone, he is geeking out here majorly. This is a pretty cool computer.
Mm.
Oh, nice.
And the keyboard.
Nice, Trev. Nice.
And the keyboard works properly, which is an issue with the previous computer we had in here.
Yeah. I did all my uni assignments on the old computer, and yeah.
Mm.
Yay. But yes. Okay, Trev's been geeking out about this little thing here for the last 3 days. Yeah.
It's all good. I'm finally putting it to...
We're talking amongst geek friends here.
Yes.
So this is all good.
Absolutely. And now we should probably get onto history.
We should.
What the... Hello and welcome to What the History, your fortnightly bits of bizarre history, custom picked and hand selected to make you say, What the History?
Oh, this is funny. This is actually my last What the History before I go to the UK.
Unless we
Sad
do
face.
Some advanced ones.
Sad face. Oh, do you want to do some advanced ones?
We could do.
Okay.
In which case, I'll do.
All right, but I think we should talk about this week's one.
We should.
Hi.
So, what do you have for us this time, Susie?
All right.
Actually, we didn't introduce ourselves.
No. I don't know who I am. Am I?
Should I just start from the start again? Why don't you start from the start again?
Why? That was funny.
Because I'm going to... Okay, fine.
I thought it was funny anyway.
I am Trevor Holland.
And I am Susie Holland.
And what does Susie have for us this time?
Oh, wow. What an interesting intro. Thank you. Okay, now. Oh, London flavours. Okay, now, London is full of very tall, iconic structures. The Shard, 1, 8 and 25 Canada Square at Canary Wharf, Heron Tower, 122 Leadenhall Street, a.k.a. the Cheese Grater. And I've seen this thing. It really does look like a cheese grater. 30 St. Mary's Axe, a.k.a. the Gherkin, which also does look like a gherkin. I could go on all night, but I have to stop somewhere and also stop laughing. Okay. And then, by today's standards, you have a tiny structure which stands in Trafalgar Square, which was partly paid for by the Tsar of Russia as the largest single funds contributor, and when it was completed in 1843, an upset Frenchman called it, and I quote, hideous, like a rat impaled on a stick, end quote. My what the tonight focuses on the 51.6 metre, or 169 feet 3 inch, so-called spiritual centre of London, Nelson's Column. The Shard in London stands at 309.7 metres or 1,016 feet tall. Sir Nelson is a shrimp compared. I know how he feels. I'm not exactly that tall myself. In fact, when the column was measured in 2006 during restoration work, it was found to be 4.87 metres or 16 feet shorter than people originally thought it was. The column pays homage to the man who famously suffered from seasickness his whole life and member of the House of Lords, Admiral Horatio Nelson, as an English hero, the victor of the Battle of Trafalgar, a battle in which he was shot through the shoulder and spine, dying a few hours later on the HMS Victory on the 21st of October 1805. Despite Nelson's heroics, it took 32 years for a committee to be formed to discuss how the people were going to pay tribute to such a man. A competition was held to design something fitting, and this was won by William Railton, who designed a Corinthian column which would weigh more than 2,500 tons. The governing body of the competition didn't really get on board with Railton's idea, and the competition was rerun and Railton winning again, obtaining not only the prize of designing the monument, but also winning £200 for it. Edward Hodges Baily got the nod as the runner-up, and as a consolation prize, he got to sculpt Nelson's figure, and the first stone was laid in 1840, 35 years after Nelson died. By 1843, the money had dried up and the column was still unfinished. Disgruntled, the government took over the funding and declared that to save on further costs, 9.1 metres or 30 feet had to be sliced off. The figure of Nelson ended up being 5.5 metres tall and weighed in at 18 tonnes. The column is Dartmoor granite, and Baily expertly carved the statue from a single piece of Craigleith sandstone donated by the Duke of Buccleuch. Baily did his job so well that the medals on Nelson are very detailed, and they also had the removed right arm that was also kept on the statue. Nelson lost his right arm in 1797 when he was shot with a musket ball and the arm had to be amputated, but he was up and back at work within the hour thanks to opium. The famous bronze lions were added to the bottom of the column in 1867 and were sculpted by Edward Landseer, who used some artistic license with the work. This was due to the lion model, a dead one provided by London Zoo, rotting, and Landseer had to make do. Landseer was lambasted for his work as the unidentical lion's manes look like waterfalls. Landseer took over the job of sculpting the lions when his predecessor Thomas Milne's prototype were not appreciated, so those lions were shipped off to Yorkshire, where they still stand proudly today. In 1896, the statue was chipped when a lightning storm hit Nelson's shoulder, and to ensure that the statue was protected, a bronze bandage was added to the statue and removed a century later. The four bronze bas-reliefs at the bottom of the column depict Nelson's four great victories and are made from melted down captured French guns. These commemorated Nelson during the Battle of Cape St. Vincent in 1797 and were sculpted by Musgrave Watson, the Battle of the Nile in 1798 sculpted by William Woodington, the Bombardment of Copenhagen in 1801 sculpted by John Turneth, and finally the Battle of Trafalgar, also known as the Death of Nelson in 1805, sculpted by John Carew. Each of the bas-reliefs are 5.5 metres square or 18 feet in size. Humongous. In 1923, fraudster Arthur Ferguson was looking at great interest at an American tourist from Iowa who was taking a big interest in Nelson's column, and they got to talking. Ferguson bemoaned the fact that because of the massive debt, top brass in England had decided to sell the column, including the lions. Sensing a con was to be made, Ferguson decided to advise the rich American the lot was going to be sold for £6,000, and by strange coincidence, the sale was entrusted to him. The American begged Ferguson to let him buy it. The deal was made after Ferguson had spoken to his employers, and Ferguson walked away with a check and cashed it. The American worked out later that he had been duped, and Ferguson had also accepted a down payment for Big Ben for £1,000. Oh, gosh. He deserves a what, though. Adolf Hitler wanted Nelson's column for himself so badly that he forbade the Luftwaffe to bomb it, as they wanted to dismantle it and take it back to Berlin if Hitler had been victorious during the Second World War. Apparently, Adolf loved how the column captured the essence of imperial sovereignty. On 18th of April 2016, two Greenpeace protesters, Alison Garrigan and Luke Jones, scaled the column to protest against air pollution in London. They placed a papier-mâché gas mask emblazoned with a ship's wheel and chained anchor over Nelson's nose and mouth, quote, to demonstrate the serious impact on air pollution in the capital and around the globe, end quote. The lightning conductor in the statue was damaged in the protest, and Garrigan and Jones abseiled to the ground and were arrested by the police, who described the protests as, and I quote, polite and peaceful, end quote. The pair escaped jail time and caused £35,000 damage. However, Nelson's column is not without opposition. Recently, there have been calls to tear it down as statues commemorating Southern leaders from the American Civil War have been. Nelson was a believer in the slave trade and had friends who were plantation owners around the oceans he travelled on. Those defending the column says that Nelson helped regulate laws on the high seas and brought peace. Today, Nelson's column stands where he has stood for over 100 years facing Whitehall, towards the Admiralty, the HMS Victory at Portsmouth, and also in the direction of Cape Trafalgar, southern Spain, and has earned a place in What the History. I think when I'm in London next month, I might just check Nelson out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I would just like to add one personal piece of knowledge, I guess, about the Battle of Trafalgar. I am the family's genealogist as well. Yay me. And I've been doing quite a lot of family history in readiness for going over to the UK, because that's where I'm from. And a little bit of history was that my great-great-great-great-grandfather was in the Battle of Trafalgar with Nelson on the HMS Victory. And I've been able to uncover some evidence about his paybook and everything there as well. So he was on the ship with Nelson when he died. So, and he was also a bit of a naval hero, my grandfather.
Lovely.
So I thought that was rather interesting and tied in quite nicely to this.
Indeed and it does. Yes,
thank you.
So your great-great-great-great-great-grandfather and Nelson sailing the seas.
Just four greats there, honey.
I can never keep track of how many greats.
Just four. Four times great-grandfather.
There we go. But, you know, I'm sure out there on the wide ocean, they would have come across many things they found mysterious and strange.
They most probably did. Yeah. I'm not sure if the Kraken was part of it, but
yeah. Yeah, maybe dragons. I'm sure there were many a mysterious sound. Mysteries.
Mysteries of the high seas.
Mysteries, mysteries, mysteries. We all love a good mystery.
We do.
When something happens that leads to investigation and speculation, the theories can get wild and the net gets spread far and wide. You might think there haven't been too many mysteries in more recent times. Well, let's just say that What the History keeps on rolling. In 1997, scientists working for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA for short, were searching for underwater volcanoes and had set up listening stations to scan the oceans for telltale sounds. What they heard at two stations, over 5,000 kilometres apart, was the loudest sound to be recorded from the briny depths. The sound, known as the bloop, kept scientists guessing for over a decade. In a 2012 interview with Wired magazine, the manager of the NOAA acoustics program, Bob Dziak, stated, and I quote, "It's unusual when a sound is recorded on all of the sensors we have deployed. If it's a ship or a whale, when it makes a sound in the ocean, it isn't big enough to be recorded all the way across the Pacific. But the sound was recorded on many hydrophones, so it stood out in our mind as being something unique." End quote. This is the sound they released to the public. The initial recording lasted about a minute, so the release version had been sped up by about 16 times. Thoughts on what this mysterious sound could be gripped the scientific world. Many speculated the sound was similar to whale song, meaning it could be biological in origin. However, no whale could make a sound this loud, so thoughts turned to the possibility of an undiscovered monstrous creature lurking in the dark depths of the ocean. Speculation ranged from a surviving dinosaur to the possibility of a giant squid. With over 95% of the world's ocean being unexplored, this did not seem to be too much of a stretch. Considering footage of a giant squid was first captured in 2004, 7 years after the bloop. Some less scientific theories also emerged. The estimated location of the bloop was southwest of Chile, deep in the Pacific Ocean on the edge of Antarctica. This led to fans of author H.P. Lovecraft sitting up and taking notice. It was thought the sound came from the rough location of the underwater city of Arlai. In Lovecraft's short story, The Call of Cthulhu, this is where the dark creature the story was named for, Cthulhu himself, was imprisoned. So what was this mysterious sound? Was it a dark demonic force from before the dawn of time, a relic from the time of the dinosaurs, or a giant yet undiscovered version of a more contemporary sea creature? In 2010, 13 years after the bloop had been discovered, scientists finally came through with what is considered to be one of the most anticlimactic outcomes of recent times. In 2005, the NOAA set up surveys in the Bransfield Strait and Drake Passage in Antarctica, and spent the next 5 years monitoring what sounds dominated the aquatic audio landscape. As to what they discovered, well, I think it's best to let Bob tell us the outcome. Quote, "It was in analysis of this recent acoustic data that it became clear that the sounds of ice breaking up and cracking is a dominant source of natural sound in the Southern Ocean. Each year there are tens of thousands of what we call ice quakes, created by the cracking and melting of sea ice and ice carving off glaciers into the ocean. And these signals are very similar in character to the bloop." End quote. So the bloop was the first recording of an ice quake in the Antarctic and not a giant sea creature. Unless the ice quake was caused by Cthulhu breaking free from his prison, of course. What the history?
What the history indeed. And I reckon I like the story of Cthulhu breaking from his ice prison a lot better than the bloop. You know, I like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, despite being fictional, Cthulhu breaking
free. Oh, come on, he's real.
Well, it would also be very, very, very bad news with insanity increasing in the world and everything going worse. Oh, hang on, wait, I'm about to get political.
Oh. Why stop there?
Stop before I get political. There we go.
Go the whole hog.
A little bit of Cthulhu. A little bit of Cthulhu-based political humour.
I think he'd be impressed with that.
Implying the potential escape of Cthulhu, given our more recent history events. But I prefer to focus on the fun stuff.
You do know that he can't live on land.
He's a force from beyond the dawn of time. He doesn't give a you know what.
He don't care. He's nasty.
This is not meant to be a Cthulhu park. Cthulhu
cast. I love Cthulhu. Oh, I think he's adorable.
I wouldn't mind a plushie Cthulhu, to be honest.
Oh, they are cute.
Yeah. Anyway, on that note, I hope you have all enjoyed this episode of What the History. Now, if you want to know more about what we have discussed, all the links to our references are in the podcast description right down below. If you are watching the YouTube version of this, there will be a link to the podcast page.
And maybe in a picture of Cthulhu.
Maybe. I've got one
there. Oh, hail Cthulhu!
We need to be home from Cthulhu and finish this podcast off because I'm not feeling well.
Are we going to get busted by the estate of Lovecraft?
I don't think so.
We're advertising Cthulhu. Okay.
No, we're not.
All right.
Okay.
No, we're not.
So you can find all the references on the podcast page. And if you go to our homepage, wthpod.rufusproject.com, you'll find all of our previous episodes and all the links to all our references. And boy, are there some doozies. Of course, if you would like to get in touch with us, we would love to hear from you. That's super duper easy. Go to the aforementioned homepage and leave a comment below various episodes. You can find us on Facebook at the What the History podcast Facebook page, or Twitter at @pod_what, or just look for the hashtag WTHpod. You can even send us an email to WTHpod@rufusproject.com. We make it easy for you guys, so go for it.
Come on, show us some love.
Woo! On that note, we shall be back. Depending if we record an extra episode or not before Susie goes.
We may be able to. I am quite busy in these last 2 weeks. Yes, I am busy. Stop looking at me like that. Stop looking at me like that.
But I'll probably try to get something out there regardless. So,
yeah.
We will be back in one way or another over the next few weeks. With some more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
what the history? Good night, everyone.
Catch you later.
Hey there, Cthulhu, down there in your sunken city. You're a billion light years distant, and the stars look very pretty from Relay. so close and yet so far away. E-I-E-A. Cthulhu Ftagin, or is that Cthulhu Ftine? I can never quite remember, 'cause I'm not in my right mind since I...